Hello, Happy New Year, and thanks once again for downloading a podcast on CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady, and this is podcast number 205. This week I'm joined by the world-famous Lackey Moore, and we once again discuss the adventures of Celtic Football Club and the performances of the team and the excellent performance at home against Motherwell in the league recently. We then also go on to touch on the impending 20th anniversary of Celtic not doing what Rangers did. We saved ourselves. I'm now joined by Lackey Moore, so this is the first podcast of the year, so Happy New Year to you, Lackey.
Happy New Year, Harry.
So we'll start off, there's a number of things to talk about on the football side of things. You and I were both at the Motherwell game on Saturday. So what were your thoughts on the Celtic Motherwell game?
I thought they were excellent. I really enjoyed the game. Right from the start, I thought they had quite a good tempo. They got an early goal, which always helps. But I thought they really were by far the dominant team in the first half. I said Eddie a text at half time, commenting on that. And then when they got the third goal, I was actually happy when we got the third goal, because Motherwell had come into the game and Motherwell were playing well. And I think that's really what has been missing in a lot of games, that the game was actually competitive for a wee while in the second half. And if Motherwell had scored, it might have been a wee bit different. But Celtic fortunately got the third goal, and then they were never going to lose after that. But I thought it was a smashing game. And so did Eddie when I spoke to him about it.
I thought one of the things about it that was quite good was, I don't know whether it was because Motherwell being second in the league and being on their six-game winning run, I felt they'd come to Celtic Park to not sit in.
Yes.
And from our perspective, it's the reason why over the years, historically, Hibs has been an attractive game at Celtic Park, because Hibs, they did it most recently when Butcher in charge, but historically, Hibs don't come to sit in at Celtic Park. Maybe not so great for Hibs fans, because what it does is create lots of space for us to have an entertaining game and win comfortably most of the time. But I thought that was the same on Saturday. Motherwell didn't sit in, as a consequence, there was more space and it was a more enjoyable game.
It would be just daft to say that Celtic were lucky, because they were by far a better team. But there was a couple of incidents where if the ball had bounced differently, they might have scored, and it would have been a different game entirely. There was one in the first half where I think the ball almost hit off George Sutton right into the goalkeeper's arms when it was 1-0. And then just after half-time, they had two good chances to score. And as I say, I was quite pleased with the third goal then, because I thought it took a lot of pressure off them.
I was speaking to someone actually on Saturday who... they work with a guy who's a Motherwell season book holder. Just you were talking about one of the chances there. We got into a conversation with McFadden at the game, and I was saying that I remember, it gets back to what St Anthony and I were saying in the podcast before Christmas, I remember when McFadden came into the Motherwell team and people were raving about him and saying Celtic should look and sign him. I always used to say, but is he any better than Sean Maloney? Or is it just that McFadden's playing every week and Maloney's not?
Yes.
And when McFadden was kicking about for free, there was some Celtic fans thought he should go for him, and I didn't. And what this guy was telling me, that the Motherwell fan he knows thinks that McFadden gets a game for Motherwell on reputation, does nothing for 90 minutes, bar he'll do one trick. And he thinks it's a conscious effort from McFadden that he does a wee trick in front of that section of die-hard hard Motherwell fans. They then love him, think he's great, and then he gets substituted with 15 minutes to go and he gets a standing ovation. And this guy will be sitting there thinking he's done nothing all game. And I thought he didn't really do that much on Saturday, and he should have scored that chance.
I think you're being a wee bit harsh though, because I thought in the second half he actually competed quite well. First half he was never at the races. But I thought their revival was down to the wee nasty creature that plays in midfield. he had a good game. Is it Lapsley?
You're talking about Keith Lasley.
Yes.
One of the things I can't stand about him, and because I keep hearing this phrase, you know he's a dirty player. Every time we play against him, he'll be involved in some fouls, and then you'll see it on Sports Scene. He didn't do it this time. You know, that's unusual, because Lasley's not that type of player.
Yes, I
know. Well, do you know what? He effing is that type of player, because every single time I watch Sports Scene for a Celtic Motherwell game, somebody says, oh, he's not that type of player.
Well, he's a wee thug.
He is.
But I actually thought, curiously enough, I thought he played quite well in the 25 minutes of the second half. And I thought that McFadden put himself about a wee bit and actually had a wee bit of an influence on the game. But I think once we get the third goal, it was home and hosed.
Well, the other thing about it, is we were 2-0 up at half time, so we take the foot off the gas a bit when we come out in the second half. We're not quite, you know, so there's going to be an element of that coming into the game as well. Not to be overcritical, I mean, it's human nature that you're going to be slightly relaxed when you're so much better than everyone else.
I thought
it was very impressive.
I don't know why they go like that, though. I mean, I think that they're playing so well, they would just carry on and enjoy playing well.
I think because it's that human nature thing. You know you're better than the people you're playing against, so you just take that extra touch because you know you've got the time to do that.
And yeah, that's what slows the game down. It's when they take the extra touch that the game moves much faster and they play better.
Yes, I know. And that's one of the challenges that you've got when you know you're better than the opposition and you're winning every week, is for that to keep that mentality high, which then gets me on to, you know, it was a good performance, and I'm certainly not criticising, but everything can be improved upon. There was only two things that disappointed me on Saturday. One of them was that the manager didn't immediately make substitutions to get the youth players on, the younger players on.
I agree.
The minute the third goal went in.
That's right. I was talking to my wife about it, and I said, I never understood, even when I was playing football, when the score goes to 3-0, the substitute should come on. Because if they're not good enough to hold a 3-goal lead, they shouldn't be there. And if it's 3-0 for the opposition, they can't do any worse. And I used to hate if I was a substitute and we were getting beat 3-0 and I never got on. And I thought on Saturday was a great opportunity to bring Beatong and maybe a couple of youngsters on.
Well, I'd have been looking to bring on Henderson.
Probably, but I like Beatong. I'd like to see Beatong get a run in the team.
Well, so would I. And in fact, one of the things that confuses me slightly is we played with the diamond in midfield and Beatong played in those games round about November time when we beat Motherwell, we thumped them at Fir Park and we beat Hearts at Tynecastle. And we play with the Diamond, play with Beaton. And then the manager took him out, changed the formation, and we were winning games, and they weren't very exciting.
That's right.
The reason I'd like to see Henderson is because if I was to have a criticism of the manager setting a target to win every game, or to not lose a game in the domestic league season, or the domestic season, one... Well, if your target's to not lose a game, I wish he'd come up with that target just before the Morton game. But my only concern is that could become a stifling target.
Well, I wrote an article for the web, remember?
Yeah.
And I suggested that really I don't think it's even worth bothering about. The only competition that they need to remain unbeaten in is the Scottish Cup. It's important that they win the Scottish Cup. But he should take a chance to blood some youngsters. And if they drop a point or even lose a game in the way, then so be it.
Yeah, I mean...
The value in getting these youngsters into the team would be outweighed by preserving some record that really is their record anyway, because they're not playing against anybody.
Yeah, I mean, you set yourself a target to not lose a game, and it's laudable to have that. And I understand why. It's to deal with the point I was just making about the difficulty of playing week in, week out against players that you know you're better than. So it's laudable from that perspective to say, right, okay, we're going to try and do this. But issue with that then is, if you're the manager, the longer it goes on, the more you're not wanting to lose that record. So the more you are going to be playing your first pick players every week, which then means I would, my target, and maybe it's not a target he would necessarily articulate out loud, I would prefer it if he'd set the players a target of scoring X goals in the season.
Uh-huh.
Targets to score 100 goals in the season.
Yeah.
That's more likely to give us entertainment than not losing every week. Or the other target, if he'd set himself a target of he wants, for example, four of the guys who played under 19 football last season to have had a minimum of 10 first-team games this season.
Yes. I mean, you could play these youngsters and still set yourself that target of not losing any games. You know, it's not just a case of you're getting a game to get a game. You're getting a game to preserve this winning run, shows what you can do.
Yeah.
If you're going to be Celtic players, we expect you not to lose these games.
And I think one of the reasons why some of us even more so would like to see some of these youngsters would be the pre-season, well, it wasn't pre-season, it was one game into the season, friendly against Liverpool, when we played the youngsters. They acquitted themselves well. And then the game in Turkey against Galatasaray, where Galatasaray were pretty obviously taking it seriously and had a full house there. I thought they were fantastic. The speed with which they played, the way they retained the shape of the team.
They were terrific.
Yeah.
I noticed that the young boy in the midfield, that Henderson?
Yes.
He was interviewed after it on Celtic TV and they asked him for his thoughts. They said it was wonderful to play beside Vito. He said he talked me through the game. He gave me great advice. That was really good to have him beside me. And I thought, well, that's the sort of thing the manager should be working on if there's a future in it for these guys. Get them in the first team. Because if they can play against Galatasaray, they can play against Inverness Carlow Thistle.
Exactly. And I also liked Henderson that he was standing up for himself under some robust challenges. And the point about the manager, possibly he wants to play these youngsters, but because he's starting to get close to, he's more than halfway through the ability to go unbeaten all season. Because of that, that will start to impair his decisions about what players he's picked. Yeah. And an example of that would be beginning of November, Neil Lennon says, Baldy's been improving in training and the few games when he's come on, he's done well. So we've got a hectic schedule coming up with the end of the Champions League and in the domestic competitions and the Scottish Cup coming up. So you will see Baldy, he will get some games because we've got to play these type of players because we've got a hectic schedule coming up.
Yes.
He didn't. Then, just before Christmas, Lennon said the same thing in an interview, where we've got a hectic festive period schedule coming up, so Baldy will get some game time. And he hasn't. Now, Lennon might sit there and say, do you know why, Harry? It's because he's not good enough.
I don't think that's true.
Well, I would say, well, fair enough, that's your opinion. But your statements don't make me think that, because you're telling me he's going to get some game time and then he's not getting game time.
Do you ever notice when they come on at half-time, do their warm-ups at half-time, Danny McGrain goes and works with Baldy?
I do notice that, yeah.
You think to yourself, he must be going to bring him on. And then he doesn't. You think, what was the point in that wee bit of specialist work with the coach if all he's going to do is sit on the bench? Because he could do that during the week.
Yeah.
It's very odd.
However, having said that, great performance on Saturday. Perhaps the mini break that we got away from domestic football was beneficial and was the reason behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've mentioned Baldy there, which then gets me on to some things about we're in the January transfer window. We have a whole raft. We could virtually field a team of just under £2 million strikers who can't score goals. We have Pukki, we have Stokes, we have Bangura, we have Baldy. What's gone away on loan? And we all want to sign a striker.
I know. And you do wonder, is the reason some of these guys can't score goals is because they don't get a game. I mean, even the best strikers don't score all the time. But if they're in the team all the time, they'll get more than their fair share of goals. But if you're not in the team, you won't.
Yeah, but Stokes is playing more than anyone else.
I think Stokes is playing really well.
Do you?
Thought his contribution Saturday was excellent. He's greedy, I'll admit that.
No, I just don't think he's very good.
He was involved in all of the goals.
He's not Celtic class, in my opinion.
I don't know. I think he's a clever player.
I don't. In fact, I actually think the complete opposite. I think the problem with Stokes is he's not a clever player. I think he plays on his heels. There was a point. There was a ball played in by Forrest in the first half, and it was exactly when you're playing a system with one guy up front because Commons. I think Commons is playing. I mean, he's not really a midfielder anymore. He's a striker, but Commons is playing with more of a striker's instinct than Stokes has got.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And there was a ball played in the first half by Forrest, exactly where, if you're playing with one guy up front and a couple, two, three attacking players immediately behind, it's exactly where the main head striker should be.
So Gary Hooper would have been?
Where Gary Hooper would have been, and it was 15 yards from where Anthony Stokes was.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I do know what you mean about his temper being the main striker. But I do think he contributes quite well. I think he's a very skillful player.
Yeah, if somebody offered a fiver for him, I'd take it.
Oh, no. Come on, Harry. Don't be daft.
I honestly don't think he's... I think he is what he was, which is a third or fourth choice striker for us.
I think you're very harsh on him, I do. I know he's not an out-and-out goal scorer, but I do think he's a good footballer. I think he makes some wonderful passes and quite insight. I mean, he had a pass for that third goal Saturday from one side of the pitch to the other. It was a tremendous pass.
He just plays too much on his heels for me.
There are times where he should play people in where he goes and there's a shot. He's quite selfish, really. It annoys me.
But as a striker, he's... You know, people criticise him, criticise Samaras on the occasions when Samaras is up front for the things that Stokes does, which is not being anywhere near the box, running out wide.
He certainly spends a lot of time on the left wing.
Yeah, he's not a central striker. I mean, to be fair to him, again, The system, he might turn around and say to me, yeah, but the system we are playing doesn't suit me. I am suited to playing off a Gary Hooper type striker. And at the moment, we've got lots of players who are suited to playing off a Gary Hooper type striker.
That's right. Mm-hmm. But it struck me when they played those games where they ran up the high scores, he and Pukki played together. And Pukki played quite well. Set up a couple of goals for him. And then they split them up and let Pukki out the team again. I got into a debate the other day on Twitter about the discussion that Jackson had on the radio coming home on Saturday night about who the player of the year would be.
Yeah.
And I think it's by consensus it'll be Chris Commons. Yeah. And I would argue with that at all. But I was making the point that Jackson said he was the best player in the country. And I made the observation that he wasn't even the best player in the Celtic team, let alone the best player in the country. He might be player of the year, but that doesn't make him the best player in the country. And I get all sorts of interesting comments, including one from my son, telling me really more or less what an idiot I was. But I'd still believe it.
Who would you say is the best player in the Celtic team?
I'd say probably it's a toss-up between Virgil and Izaguirre in terms of being a footballer.
Well, I would certainly say Virgil. I read stuff about Virgil having a sticky start. I don't recall Virgil having a sticky start.
No, there was one game, I think, where they did it. Was it Shakhtar Karaganzi away from home?
Yeah, but even then, I didn't think...
They weren't very comfortable.
Yeah, I thought it was more Moyakolo. Didn't look comfortable. And I also put the blame on the manager because it was the first... You know, he dropped Ambrose for that game. He's the first Celtic centre-half I can think of that we've signed. And straight away you've said, he's the answer to what we need.
Well, he was certainly a better player than the one that they sold.
Oh, by a country mile.
You heard the likes of Tom English waxing on the radio about it and saying, oh, the jury's out on this kind of thing. What games do you go to? You know, do you ever watch football? The guy was a class act the day he walked in the door.
By a country mile, he is better than Kelvin Wilson.
Oh, jeez, oh. Someone said about losing their best centre-half. Get away.
No, when we did our top 10 players for last season, Kelvin Wilson wasn't in my 10.
No, was, I would agree. I never had him. I think it was a waste of space. He's the big jest. No, it's harsh. Easily knocked about.
Yes, I felt he was far too easily knocked about for a big centre-half. But anyway, then, that's in the past. But Virgil, so, yes, I for me, it's between Virgil and Commons as to who the best two players are.
Well, I don't think Izaguirre is a terrific player. I really think he's a terrific new player. I think if you were selling them, you'd probably get more for Izaguirre than you would for Commons.
Yeah, but I think that's largely because Commons is now past 30.
Well, he was never a player that Pope was going to pay a lot of money for in his peak. He's at his peak now.
Well, I agree, and actually...
Okay, I think he's a really good player. I think he's a tremendous buy, worth every penny and more. And I say, but that doesn't make him the best player on the team or the best player in the country.
But I suppose there's also a measure of... you know, the Americans love the phrase about MVP... I would say that Chris Commons is the most valuable player in the Celtic team at the moment.
And yet he left him out in some of the European ties, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. He must have had doubts about it.
Well, I don't understand why he did that.
Well, I thought that night they lost to AC Milan. They were very unbalanced. I really did. He was playing inside right. He didn't look comfortable at all. He looks happier in the middle and on the left.
I think the manager... there's been times this season where I'm not sure... With the changes that happened in the summer, I'm not sure the manager has been 100% convinced what his best team is.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty sure he knows what his best team is now.
Well, we don't know, because there's one of the boys just come in who looks, on the basis of his record, to be a better player... And some of the ones they've got already.
Well, yeah, but that's what you should always be looking to do. Surely that's the point. You know, people talk about the improvements in the team, and you know whether the club are downsizing. Well, surely one of the things the club should be doing, if you're not wanting to downsize, is every signing should be a better player than anybody who's at the club already.
Well, in theory, yes.
Which then gets us on to players who might leave the club. We are a week away from the end of the transfer window. And we've signed the Icelandic striker.
Whom no one mentions.
Yeah, because he's come in and been nowhere near. The manager, when he signed him, said he was signing him to come straight into the squad.
Aye.
However, I have read somebody somewhere saying that it was mentioned in the Icelandic press that he'd had a wee niggling injury.
Right.
So, you know, perhaps that's the reason. Obviously, the Norwegian signing. And then we've got the debate about Samaras, Ledley, and I think it's looking like Rodic's away on loan.
He's away, yes.
Yes.
He's away today, I think, yesterday.
Yeah. So, what's your thoughts, first of all, on Samaras, Ledley and Rodic going away on loan?
Well, I wouldn't be busting a gut to keep Ledley. I think Ledley's a good player, but I don't think he's a great player. And I think that I wouldn't be make them the highest paid player. I would still wouldn't give them a rise to keep them there. And now that they've brought in the Icelandic boy, it seems to me as if they always play the same position. So it wouldn't break my heart if they sold Ledley. But Samaras is a curious one because I see even tonight on Twitter his suggestions today that he was going to run down his contract.
Yep.
And I see Gregory saying on Twitter that that's madness. To run down your contract in the run-up to the World Cup is just pure daft. So he should either sign a new contract if Celtic are offering him one. And much as I like Samaras, I think maybe he needs a change and we need a change. But if he's going to stay, he should stay with a long-term view of staying and being the best player he can possibly be, because he should be coming to his peak now. Or he should go now and get games before the World Cup. Because I don't think for a minute if he decides to set out his contract, he's going to play very often.
Well,
Blair is looking to build a team.
Yeah, my understanding is that's the whole issue. Celtic wants Samaras to either sign a new contract or go.
Yes.
In January, and that Samaras doesn't want to be forced into making this decision in January.
Well, it's quite clear from reading Gregory's posts that he thinks he should be staying at Celtic. It's quite, you know, the comments he makes, it's quite clear that his agent, his representative, thinks he should be staying at Celtic. But for some reason, he seems uncertain about it. But tonight's comment on Twitter was that it's madness to run down your contract on the lead up to a World Cup, because you need to be playing. And if he's not going to stay, he probably won't be playing.
So, what do you want him to do, stay or go?
Well, I don't know. If I thought he was going to play his best all the time, I'd grab him, give him another contract right away. But given the way he's up and down and you're never sure what you're going to get, part of me thinks, well, it was nice while it lasted, but cheerio.
And Ledley?
I'd just get rid of him. I mean, I don't mean that to sound the way it sounds. I just think he's run his course and we could probably do better. Certainly, I wouldn't be paying him the wages he appears to be getting just now, because he misses a lot of games and he's not that great. He's a good player. I think it's the other day, talking to Eddie on text, I made a comment about how good I thought Scott Brown had been. And Eddie had got back and said that he'd been talking to his dad and they were saying how we really miss Scott Brown after he got ordered off against Barcelona in those remaining European ties.
Yep.
I think he has turned into a really good player. See, I think he's a better player. Poke a laugh. He's a more important player than Commons. Commons' goals are very good, but in terms of the way the team plays and motivating, driving them forward, I think Scott Brown's turned into a very good player.
Oh, absolutely, and I do think we miss him. The one thing I would say is what I was actually noticing on Saturday about Commons that I liked. I think Commons is a hard taskmaster with his colleagues, with his teammates.
Yeah,
I noticed him really having a go at people, and you've seen that in some of the statements that Commons made. You know, after the, you know, people might criticise him for not being a great teammate, but after the Juventus game,
yes,
when he said, you know, more or less, I busted a gut, but we were let down by the defence.
Aye.
So I do like the mentality that Commons seems to have. I certainly like the mentality that Brown has, and I agree with you. I think Brown's a big driving force and within the middle of the pitch, and I think we do miss him. And I think the point you're making about Ledley's wages, obviously I don't know, but I know that Ledley's at the top of our wage scale, because we signed him on a free.
Yes.
And I do wonder whether the delay in the decision from Ledley is down to the fact that he's not getting a pay rise or is maybe even getting a pay cut.
Well, that's what people seem to indicate. We don't know. But it just struck me that games that Ledley hasn't played, you have to sort of say, well, we really miss Joe Ledley. But when Brown was they playing, we really missed Brown.
No, but then it also gets back to the formation, and the point I've often made is the games where Ledley has played best have been the games where he's not one of two guys sitting in the middle with Brown.
Uh-huh.
He's given the when he's given the ability to run into the box and make runs into the box, as you know, the Hearts game was a prime example. He had the license to push forward and run, and he scored and had a great game.
He had a good game that night, yeah. I mean, it sounds really miserly to say it, but he's a good player. But I'm not sure they could do better.
I understand your point.
The money he appears to be getting.
And I suppose that's the point, you know, when I was being a bit facetious earlier about Anthony Stokes. I'm not saying Stokes is a rubbish player. I'm just saying I think we should be looking that if Stokes is in our team, if Stokes is at Celtic Park, I think he's the quality of player that he should be our third or fourth quality choice
yes,
striker.
Yes, I agree. So far we haven't found a top-class striker to take Hooper's place. Therefore, you're dependent on these guys who really aren't proven goal scorers. I don't even think that Pookie's a proven goal scorer. I think he's probably a very, very good player. I think there are indications that if he could settle in, he'd be one of the more intelligent players amongst them. But will he ever be a Gary Hooper? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. And to be fair, that's part of our problem in the price band that we shop in is the difficulty of getting a Gary Hooper 30 goal a season guy. Because everybody's wanting to pick up a Gary Hooper 30 goal a season guy.
Yes.
And the problem is these guys cost a lot of money because they're the guys who win games.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were sitting there, what positions would you be wanting to sign people in the transfer window?
We picked Gary Hooper up from the lower division club in England. Now, I don't know. You watch teams. I tend not to watch too much of the English leagues. But silly, you look at our boy Stevie May, who plays for St Johnstone, and you wonder, is he worth a punt? Because he looks quick, and he's strong, he's got an eye for a goal, and he's not bullied by anybody. He seems full of himself.
Needs a haircut.
Well,
I just joke.
I was looking at when they get a haircut. But if you remember the way Dixie Dean used to bully his way around the Motherwell team, and you buy him, and he's a star with Celtic. You know, Brian McClair playing with Motherwell, player comes to Celtic, he's a star. So you just wonder, would that boy be a star if he was given a run on the Celtic team? Because he's at a very high energy level, and he's quick. And he looks like a 30 goal a season guy.
My joke about the haircut is
I know.
Sometimes you just like people to look like athletes.
Yes.
And he doesn't look like one.
He doesn't, you know. But you know what I mean?
He
cost them.
But there's a part of me that says, a bit like my McFadden and Sean Maloney point, is he any better than, and I never know how to pronounce it, but it seems to be something like Ataich. Is he any better than him?
Don't know.
Correct.
Don't see Ataich. But of all the players you see playing in the Scottish League, he's the one that sticks out for me as being a guy with potential.
Yeah, but that's my point, in that my slight frustration is Ataich isn't getting a run in the team to find out if he is a better player than
I know that.
Than me. And I would strikers in particular seem to me to need a run in the team. What I did like was the goal he scored against Motherwell. He didn't snatch at it.
No.
In the away game at Fir Park, he didn't snatch at it. I actually thought he'd taken it too long, but that was the goal of somebody who's very self-confident, if you ask me.
Yeah. He scored the goal in the youth league last year. Remember the one against the Hearts?
Yes, I do. Yes,
it was the one Sean Maloney scored at Dunfermline.
Uh huh.
Bicycle kick. And that shows you a player who's believed his ability. And I'm not saying that I wouldn't like to see a Tadic getting a game for the Celtic at the moment, because I would. But if you were looking to bring in a striker who wouldn't cost you too much, but who might turn out to be your gold nugget or your diamond in the rough, of all the players I've seen in Scotland, Stevie May looks like the one guy who might be that gold nugget.
Well,
he might not.
No, he might not, and I don't know if again, it's always really difficult because playing for St Johnstone is completely different to playing for Celtic.
So it is.
And it's very. He's the type of player that I could imagine we sign him and then start playing him on the right hand side.
Yes, but that's part of the problem, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, you look at they're talking about Dylan McGeer getting out and loan, and I'm not saying Dylan McGeer's a star or anything, but it struck me when he played for the youth team, and I saw him playing in the youth team a few times, he played like a number 10. And the play went through him.
Yep.
And they bring him into the first team and play him in the right wing. And I thought, that's old-fashioned mentality, that business of you protect your young players by putting him in the wing. If he's good enough, he should play in a position that he has shown in.
Correct.
Is he good enough to do it at the next level?
And to be fair to, getting back to young players playing, to be fair to the manager, there is one young player who's been playing a number of games and has neither been heavily praised nor criticised.
Daniel Fisher?
Aye.
I think he's a smashing player. I made a comment about him having played really, really well, and someone took me to task and said, he's not as good a player as the Welsh boy,
Matthews.
Adam Matthews. And I wasn't saying he was a better player than Adam Matthews. What I was saying was that he has played exceptionally well. He's hardly put a foot wrong. For a young player coming into a team, he can hold his head up.
Yeah, and the only thing I would say is, and it's something that I sometimes think we forget when we're talking about young players, is also the age of Adam Matthews. And for me, and I think we touched on it once before in a podcast, I think Adam Matthews is the player that should be used as an example for all the youth players coming through. I mean, he's I think last week he turned 22.
Yes.
We talk about players that were 19 and 20 being young players coming into our team. Well, Adam Matthews was a first-team regular for us at 20.
Yes. But sure, that's part of the point, though. We go and we look at these young players at other clubs, and yet we have the best youth squad in the country and don't trust them.
And that's the point that St Anthony and I made on the last podcast, and that's always my point, getting back to the McFadden and Stevie May and all of these things, that... And people talking about us signing all these Dundee United players. Obviously, at the age of 16, 17 and 18, the guys in the Celtic under-19 team last season were, at 16, 18 and 19, better than the guys at 16, 18 and 19 playing at any other club in Scottish football.
Yes.
Because they were winning stuff for us. Suddenly, at 20, we're talking about going in 2021, or sometimes younger, we're talking about going and buying the young star at XYZ club. And I just think to myself, well, surely the only difference between that player at 18 and 20 and his counterpart at Celtic at 18 and 20 is he's played 50 first team SPL games with Motherwell or Dundee United, and the Celtic guy hasn't.
Which is the point that you made about Stevie May. If Tadic has played as many games as him, we might not even be thinking about him. Because Tadic might be the man who's ready to play in the first team. But yep, we don't know.
Well, So do you want us to? So you
do
want?
Do we have though a youth player who scores that many goals a season?
Well, it's difficult to tell because when we get a half decent youth player, he immediately moves on to the bench and is not, you know.
Yeah.
Ataich isn't playing.
That's right.
I mean, to some extent, one of my concerns.
Well, he's playing the other night when he got beat.
Aye, but a lot of these guys, then the minute they're good enough to be on the fringes of the first team, they're actually. There's an element of you can see why the appears at Dundee United or Motherwell might be starting to overtake them, just simply because getting back to, you know, things about 10,000 hours of purposeful practice and all that sort of stuff. Suddenly the Celtic youth player who's on the fringes of the first team is playing less football,
yes,
than his counterpart at Motherwell, Dundee United, Aberdeen or wherever.
Well, that's what Thomas Rodgick said today. He said he loved playing for the Celtic, but he had to play, and he wasn't playing football. And you look, you know, they're all around with Callum McGregor, how well he's doing down in England.
Yep.
As far as I can see, they've extended the loan of Jackson Irving down at Kilmarnock, because they're very pleased with him. So there are Celtic boys who are actually getting games every week. Now, are they in a better position than the boys who've stayed? Possibly. But will we take the chance to bring them back? Who knows?
Yeah.
I just think with the Celtic, if you go and loan, you're out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, you see, instead of using the loan system to, as you just said, give them first team football and give them more experience, it seems to be that it's the first sign that you're out the door.
Yes. You were talking in the last podcast, I think it was with St Anthony, about the fact that Beckham went on loan.
Yep.
So did Scholes.
Yep.
I think Scholes went to Bury, did he not? All those boys, or several of those boys, had significant first-team experience at lower league teams.
Yep.
And when he brought them all in, the likes of Hansen should have known that. But I don't think they did. They weren't coming out of the youth team. They'd been playing with men and holding their own.
Yep. But you were asked about youth. I think there's Denny Johnson and Paul McMullen who are scorers at our youth level.
Yes. Denny Johnson from Dumfries.
Yes. I thought you'd know him. So it'll be interesting to see if they can do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a thing in there. I was looking at this Celtic Quick News magazine today and a big feature of that young boy. What's his name again? The boy who was named the best player of his age in the world. He won the same poll as Neymar did when he was his age.
Oh yes, yes. What's his name? I can't remember his name, but I know who you mean.
Well, they were talking about him. The boy they brought on over in Turkey.
Yeah.
Come on, 10 minutes to go. And I had to laugh. The commentators were eulogizing. And from his own perspective, it was a wonderful thing to be brought onto the Celtic team the day after your 16th birthday. But he never actually got a kick, I don't think.
No.
And many of us knew how well he played. And I said, well, did he? It was nice to get on, and he can always say he played that game, but he didn't get a kick. No, not that you would expect him to in that short period of time. But I think you can go overboard with the hyperbole, you know, these youngsters.
So,
you see a potential. He played for a team, the Rangers Supporters Association Youth Club. He played for them for a wee while.
Right.
Then he joined the Celtic. I think he's a Tim. You know, he's a Celtic supporter.
Yeah.
But he played for St. Bartholomew's in Castlewell. And the guy who ran the team got asked to go and run the Rangers Supporters Association Youth Club. So he went with them. But he was playing against boys three times, so 3 or 4 years older than them.
Yep.
And he was only getting an odd game here and there, so he came away and came to the Celtic.
So we've talked about where the club is. What were you doing 20 years ago, Lackey?
Well, it was interesting because there's a guy here called Rob Best, who's the president of the local Celtic Supporters Club, and his wife was the secretary to the director of education down here, and he had all the stuff that Ferguson sent out. And I remember reading it and thinking, oh, I don't know what's all this about. I wasn't sure at all. You know, and then the thing got worse and worse and worse. And eventually Fergus took control. And it was like, the relief of Martha King that night. Do you remember the night when they were all standing outside Parkhead in the rain? And
I will never forget it, Lackey. It was the days before mobile phones and internet and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I remember sitting in front of my television at about 11 o'clock at night, and the STV news came on, and you had the Brian Dempsey, the game is over, the Rebels have won.
Yes.
Even thinking about it now, I could cry thinking about how happy I was that night.
We went for the first home, we came up for the first home game after it, and they get beat by Motherwell.
Doogie Arnott.
God,
yeah.
Do you know what's funny, thinking about that? I know... You know when people slag off by Carey, what a terrible manager he was.
Yes.
I was listening to the other night when he, on Sports Sound, they did an interview with Gary Holt, whom McCarey brought with the boy Whittle.
That's right, yeah. Whittle
from the army.
Uh-huh.
And everybody laughs and jeers, oh, what about McCarey? Gary Holt was a really good player. He ended up as a Scottish international.
Yeah.
Played at Norwich. He was a good player. Now, it was strange because there was another guy recently on Sports Sound, and they were talking, they played for the Celtic, and they were talking about who was there when you were there. And they mentioned Collins, and they mentioned Burns, and they mentioned Charlie Nicholas and things. Neither of them mentioned Paul McStay. And I thought, how could you not mention Paul McStay? He was the best player in the place.
He was by far one of the best players I ever saw.
If you're looking back, if you played for the Celtic at that time, during the McCarey, Tommy Burns time, and you're reflecting on who was in the team, the first one that would come to your mind would surely be Paul McStay. And neither of them mentioned him. Found that really odd. John Collins, they mentioned. You know, there were others. I thought, well, that was odd.
It was odd, but did you go to the Kilmarnock game?
No, we were living the... I think we were down here at the time. It's a midweek game.
Yeah, it was a midweek game, yeah.
I didn't have any midweek games in those days at all.
So
once Fergus came in and we got able to get season tickets, we started going to all the games. But I mean, a case of it's like you're raising up a young family. You picked and chose your games, you know.
Yeah, so when did you were saying you were unsure. So when did you become sure that there was a need for, I mean, obviously, what we're approaching now, March the 4th will be the 20th anniversary of Celtic saving themselves. And obviously, right now was probably the darkest time.
Well, I mean, I think as it went on, and you realise, you know, the whole Gryffindor thing and going to camp is lying and stuff. Although I did remember arguing with someone that whenever the Celtic played, that would be Celtic Park. So if they moved to camp is lying and been kosher and they got a really nice stadium out of it, it wouldn't have broke my heart.
No, it wouldn't have broke mine either.
It's the first time they moved. I think I saw a guy with a flag the other day. It was a picture of Celtic Park and says, Celtic Park, home of Celtic since 1888. And I said, well, actually, it wasn't it. Because the original park wasn't it there.
No.
So the business of moving when they're bored. But it became more and more obvious that it was just a busted flush. Although, you know, when I wrote that critical review of that book, what do you call it? That one that Paul Larkin wrote.
Yes, I know. I
had a critical review of it, and he didn't take it very well. I had to point out to him I'd actually bought the book, so I was entitled to offer a critical review of it. But, you know, it's clear in his book that we were not really as badly off is the people who were running the show. That was Rangers. I mean, they were more deeply in debt than we were, but nobody seemed to know that at the time. But it was clear that Celtic were functioning properly. Something had to be done. I never ever fancied Dempsey, I must say. There was something about him. I remember my brother, even before Fergus took over, and I said, what do you mean? He's just a mouth, he says. He'll not put any money into it. And I thought, well, you know, you always think that people in Glasgow know stuff that you don't know.
Yes.
You live away where I live. So I imagine there was Glasgow Street Wisdom involved in that. But when Fergus came along, he was the real deal. And I thought he was a marvellous wee guy. I remember being really, really annoyed at Trainer. I've written about this. He wrote a really snidey wee article about Fergus when he commented on his sort of almost anal propensities. You know, like he wanted his egg boiled exactly like this. And I remember thinking, well, he's at a 5-star hotel. He's entitled to get his egg boiled exactly like that, if that's what he wants.
Do you know that I always felt at the time, with hindsight, even clearer. The biggest reason they didn't like Fergus, there was two reasons they didn't like Fergus. Obviously, as Rangers fans, they maybe feared what he was going to do. But the other reason they didn't like Fergus, because there was a cosy club in Scottish football. There was incompetence at Celtic Park, who leaked them stories. And there was the David Murray regime of looking after his friends in whichever way or form that happened to be. And Fergus McCann was not part of any of that culture and had no time for it and was a professional. And none of the people involved were professional. But they didn't see it as professional. They just saw it as a guy behaving in a way they didn't like.
Slightly odd, he was described as by trade. Yeah. Now, I found an interesting thing about that. You know how Murray, if you crossed Murray and if you wrote in critical of him, you were beyond the pale?
Oh, your editor was phoned and asked to sack you.
I thought it was remarkable that when Celtic did an interview with Fergus about the whole takeover experience, the person who carried out the interview was Jim Traynor.
Yeah.
And Fergus didn't bear a grudge.
No.
Fergus didn't refuse to talk to him, but even though he'd been very... I know Traynor was involved in some of the meetings. At least he kept his ear to the ground when the takeover was happening. But his articles were very critical of Fergus.
Well, I was told by someone who... I certainly think this person would be more likely to know this to be the case than to have made it up, put it that way, who told me that obviously there was a certain closeness of a relationship between very well-known and high-profile Scottish business people and senior executive at various banks. I mean, that's well-known now, that very successful business people were too close to decision-makers in places like the Bank of Scotland, the Royal Bank of Scotland. Uh-huh. But one particularly ebullient and effervescent Scottish business person, who subsequently turned out to be one of the biggest tax cheats we've ever known, had a very close relationship with his bank. And that bank had a very big say in the future success or failure of Celtic Football Club.
Yes.
And due to the closeness relationship that ebullient individual tax non-paying individual had with the bank, that the upshot of that was that it cost Fergus McCann £1 million more to do everything he wanted to do at Celtic than it should have done.
Yes.
That Fergus found out it cost £1 million more, and Fergus's attitude was, well, that's in the past, let's move on and make a success of where we are.
Yes. Well, that's the way Fergus was. He was the ultimate pragmatist. You know, he didn't... There was no smoke and mirrors with Fergus. There were no moonbeams. Everything was solid and reliable and honest. He was just a great wee guy.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I think I've said before, I imagine at times he might not have been the most cuddly, warmest boss to work for. I can imagine if you weren't delivering, you'd be... it'd be an unpleasant working environment.
Well, he might be loose cards right away.
Yeah.
Wee Lou didn't fit into his idea of what a football manager was. And I think Tommy Burns found him difficult.
Yes.
Because he had a different mindset from what was the norm of Scottish football. He was a mould breaker.
And I think one of the other things that gets forgotten about Fergus, of late, when people, particularly it's on the internet, you've seen lots of chat about Celtic's charitable roots and this current PLC board being losing sight of Celtic's charitable heritage, particularly over the living wage debate. But one of the things that people don't really reflect on, I have no real recollection of Celtic doing much charitable-wise prior to the arrival of Fergus. Growing up, I thought this was something connected with Celtic's long-gone, forgotten history.
The only roots. You would get nuns doing collections outside the park. The St. Vincent de Paul, I remember one standing with a tin for them one time. You would get collections outside the park. But the club weren't organising it. They weren't driving it.
No.
Not at all.
And that's one of the things that is forgotten and that hopefully will come out as we get closer to the 20th anniversary of Celtic not going down the route of other clubs and of Fergus coming in. One of the other things that Fergus reintroduced was the charity side of the club and ensuring that the money from the club went towards the charity and that Celtic proactively promoted that charity.
When we did the Tommy Burns suppers down here, when Tommy was a manager, I used to have a Tommy Burns supper this week. And all the guys would come and I would make Irish stew and leek potato soup and a trifle. And we would take a collection and send it to Skiaf. And one day I was asked to give a speech. I was a keynote speaker. And one year it was my turn. And I talked about Fergus, the McCann Revolution, blah, blah, blah. And I mentioned this. And one of my friends, guy I played golf with, he took umbrage at it. He was really annoyed. It was not David McCann. It was the supporters' money. He said, well, of course it was the supporters' money. But he created the opportunity for structured charitable giving. And the supporters bought into it.
Yeah.
But he doesn't like you to say that it's anything to do with the Celtic. It's the supporters. But then, we're the Celtic. You know, I've always thought that if you talk about the Celtic as a club, it includes the supporters. Because if they're not there, there is no club.
Exactly. And that's hopefully one of the things that will start to come, that we can start to commemorate over as we get closer to the 20th anniversary of Fergus, and there'll be a few more things I think we'll manage to get in the podcast. Might even have a player from the just immediately pre Fergus era. If you've looked on Twitter tonight, I'm hoping to get Cal Muggleton on.
Do you know Carol Muggleton wasn't that bad a goalkeeper?
Well, that's the gist of what the podcast is going to be about.
Is it? Because I go into Twitter, I know Twitter, but Kennedy Hill Street, and you get people talking about those times and you think that everything was bad. And in a way, it was pretty bad. But McCarry was trying to build a team with nothing. And I've got a friend who was a really good amateur footballer and a very good coach of schoolboy teams and things like that. He's a Rangers fan. And he said that he was quite sure that McCarry would have built a team that would have competed. They might not have played as expansive football as Tommy Burns' team did, but he would have put a team that next season that would have been hard to beat because he was buying journeymen. And Carol Muggleton was a bad goalkeeper.
Yeah, but it then comes down to how we want the club to be, how we want it to play and all those sorts of things.
Yes, but you would think that everything about it was... All the bad stuff was to do with the board, that the team was properly financed, but there was the odd thing about it. You could see potential for growth. And as I say, the boy Holt was one who went on to make a good career. And Carol Muggleton was a good goalkeeper down in England.
But Justin Whittle wasn't. Although he went on to have a career with Stoke and Hull. Hull boy would know all about Justin Whittle. He was at Hull for 6 years from 98 to 2004. And then Grimsby. He retired in 2011.
But, I mean, these boys were in the army. And rather than laugh, I thought, that's quite astute. Know that there are boys there that we picked up for nothing. Because we didn't have any money.
Well, as I say, hopefully there'll be more to come on as we get closer to the 20th anniversary of Fergus. But
he's a Fergus came across for it, wouldn't he? He's got season tickets.
Well, we'll see.
He's got a seat. I know that. I heard an interview with him recently where he said he still has his season tickets.
Well, as I say, we'll see. We'll see what comes.
That'd be great.
Anyway, that's great, Lackey. I'll be able to get this up soon, so thanks for joining me. Thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast on CelticUnderground.net. That was number 205 with Lackey Moore. Just enough time for me to say enjoy your haggis, neeps and tatties if you're into that sort of thing.
My love is like a red, red rose that's newly sprung in June. My love is like a melody that's sweetly playing in tune. Till all the seas gone dry.